This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld today is praising U.S. troops for unleashing events that he said will, quote, unquestionably shape the course of Iraq. Speaking earlier to soldiers at Baghdad Airport, Rumsfeld praised them for doing a truly remarkable job, he said, in Iraq, especially in avoiding civilian casualties wherever possible.
While your adversary did everything in his power to put civilian lives at risk, you took such great care to protect the lives of innocent civilians.
Coincidentally, Rumsfeld's comments come as a Belgian lawyer is announcing plans to file a war crimes lawsuit against General Tommy Franks. Lawyer Jan Furman says he will file that complaint next month on behalf of a group of Iraqis claiming to be victims of U.S. cluster bombs.
Some of the war crimes committed were very clearly a responsibility not of the men on the ground, but of the command, the superior command of the troops. For example, the use of cluster bombs against civilian targets.
Vermont says he understands there isn't much of a chance he'll face Franks in court, but he hopes the allegations will prompt an independent inquiry. The atmosphere is growing more tense now in China's capital, Beijing, as the city's mayor admits there aren't enough hospital beds to deal with the growing SARS problem. More on that story from correspondent Celia Hatton.
Beijing's new mayor, Wang Qishan, has admitted that the ongoing spread of SARS has already overwhelmed the 21 hospitals across the city that were appointed to deal with the epidemic. A written statement distributed at a press conference with the mayor today explained that due to a shortage of births at designated hospitals, not all suspected SARS patients could be hospitalized there in a timely manner. The mayor also tried to dispel ongoing rumors that the Beijing authorities will force the entire city into a 10-day quarantine by closing it off to the outside. The city of 13 million is quickly becoming a virtual ghost town, with many restaurants and businesses shutting their doors. To date, Beijing has reported 1,448 SARS cases and quarantined a further 8,924 people. Celia Hatton, Beijing.
Are you a prescription plan member who uses Clarinex, Zyrtec, or Allegra for allergy relief? Then you should know that many plans are changing the coverage level on your nasal allergy medicine, which might cost you more money. Don't let nasal allergy relief cost you more this year. Just ask your doctor about Flonase, fluticasone propionate nasal spray 50 micrograms. Flonase is approved to relieve the nasal symptoms from pollen, dust mites, pet dander, pollution, smoke, and strong odors. More triggers than any leading allergy medicine. Comparable efficacy and safety among Flonase and these products has not been established. For best results, use Flonase daily. Maximum relief may take several days and results may vary. Side effects are generally mild and may include headache, nosebleed, or sore throat. To learn more about Flonase, see our ad in Fitness Magazine. Visit www.flonase.com or call 1-800-FLONASE. If the copayment for your allergy medicine is costing you more money, ask your doctor if Flonase is right for you. All it takes is Flonase.
United Airlines has signed concession deals now with two of its major unions as it works to cut costs and emerge quickly from bankruptcy. The new contracts will be submitted to a Chicago bankruptcy court judge later today for approval. The agreement with machinists and flight attendants now follows earlier deals with pilots, flight dispatchers, and meteorologists. President Bush is expected today to sign a national Amber Alert legislation designed, of course, to quickly notify communities when a child has been abducted. Attorney General John Ashcroft says this legislation is a major step forward in the effort to recover abducted children.
And now, our motivational speaker, Carl!
Who's ready to reach the inner winner?
Allergies have your sinuses congested? Afrin No Drip Nasal Spray starts to relieve congestion instantly. Sudafed takes up to 30 minutes to start working. And after 4 hours, Afrin still does a better job keeping nasal passages open.
Ah, now I feel like a winner.
Breathe better in an Afrin instant. Use as directed. Compared to Sudafed maximum strength 60 milligrams.
Two Palestinian militant groups say they're responsible for a suicide bombing earlier in the Israeli city of Tel Aviv. That bombing killed, so far, three Israelis and wounded 55 others. On his way to a meeting earlier to discuss the U.S.-backed roadmap for Middle East peace, Palestinian labor minister Ghassan al-Khatib essentially said the Israelis brought this attack on themselves.
The answer to all this is to convince the Israeli government to end their policy of resorting to force and to return to the negotiating table on the basis of the international legality. And the two sides should start fulfilling their obligations to the roadmap. That's the only way.
A statement from the military wing of the Islamic group Hamas claims it carried out the attack with the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, an armed offshoot of Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat's Fatah movement. That statement says the attack was carried out to avenge Israel's killing of a senior Hamas strategist in March. Israeli police say the bomber detonated the hidden explosives after trying unsuccessfully to push past a security guard into a club. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. A picture's worth a thousand words. So picture this. A toilet bowl. You know what car part is similar to that household favorite? Battery? Gas tank? No, those won't float. But when I come back, I'll tell you what does.
Doug is frugal.
Well, money doesn't grow on trees, you know.
The problem is, Doug is about to buy a used car.
Yep, and I'm going to get ripped off!
And Doug doesn't know about Carfax, which lets you check a used car's history to see if it's been in an accident, has accurate mileage, stuff like that. So you know your money's well spent.
So I might save thousands?
Exactly, Doug. Just go to CARFAX.com or ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report.
Hey, how about we go halfsies on the car?
How about nunsies?
How about sumsies?
No. Carfax, the truth about used cars.
What's the automotive equivalent of your toilet bowl? Your carburetor. Both have little floats that control levels of liquid. Ever lifted the top of a toilet tank and bent the rod to stop water from flowing? Carburetors have similar float valves that adjust fuel level. In toilets, the excess water streams harmlessly to the sewer. But in carburetors, surplus fuel flows into the motor, causing engine damage, decreased gas mileage, and air pollution. All good reasons to include carburetor checks in your annual inspections. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting from coast to coast, from the Atlantic to the Pacific, from the Arctic to Panama, from all the way up north, all the way down to the equator on the Sirius satellite from the depths of outer space, and broadcasting around the world live on the internet and rebroadcast from 5 to 7 p.m. at radiopower.org, also on the internet. This is Tom Hartman speaking with you. We're calling for a return to the old values that made America great. The expression that I like to use is that I'm representing the radical middle. The terms left and right have just become so corrupted by folks on both sides, posturing and grandstanding and throwing mud around and whatnot, that they've lost so much meaning that I really think that most of us, most Americans, really know what they want. Most of us really understand the values that this country was founded on. And we also realize that in some ways this country is very much the holder of those values for the world. We are a beacon of light for the world in many ways. And in many ways, this country is drifting in directions that are potentially destructive to democracy, both here in the United States and around the world. And it's a concern. So we're calling for a return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy that this country was founded on, where corporations had to answer to the people and couldn't buy off politicians, where fair play wasn't a code phrase for the rich getting more and working and middle management people getting less, where there was a social contract that people's basic needs would be taken care of because that's what we do in a community, in a nation that was founded on justice and fairness, not on materialism and greed. And tomorrow we're going to be in our recap, as it were, we're going to be talking at some length tomorrow, about what this issue about, is it our money or is it the government's money? You know, are we giving back money to the rich with tax cuts, or are they getting to keep money that's theirs? That's a really good question, and the right has been bringing it up over and over and over in a single frame, and one that I think we need to examine another frame, and then you can decide. We can compare them. Our quote for the day is from Abraham Lincoln. In 1865, he said, "As I would not be a slave, so I would not be a master." This expresses my idea of democracy. where people can work to get, and then it's the end of quote from Abraham Lincoln, where people can work to get ahead, but at the same time we don't leave people starving in the streets. That's in large part my vision of what America can and should be. On our chat room, or in our on our bulletin board on TomHartman.com, we have a couple of messages here to share with you. Finisher from Chicago suburbs says, keep up the good work. Thank you. Jeannie from Kamuela, Hawaii, says, I've been reading your books, essays on common dreams, and listening to your radio show, and appreciate your thinking greatly. I've wondered, given that you were discussing on your show today the broad health needs as the political system affects them, why it is that you do not discuss the fact that Howard Dean, she says, apparently you and your guests are from Vermont, or the guest, yesterday we had Dr. Deborah Richter on, who's a physician in Vermont, and I am in Vermont. In fact, I'm broadcasting from the People's Republic of Vermont here in the Green Mountains. She says, how come you haven't discussed the fact that Howard Dean, also of Vermont and running to replace the Bush Group, talks about his past action of instituting health insurance for most of Vermont's citizens as something that could work for the U.S. if he's elected? It appears to me, Jeannie from Hawaii says, that that might make that might be an incremental step in the right direction, and that we need incremental steps as soon as possible. Jeannie, I agree with you, and I haven't been overtly talking about or promoting Howard Dean on the program, in part because we haven't done a show about that particular topic, about electoral politics or the Democratic Party politics. And I've been, the way that we're organizing this show is basically raising a question for each hour and trying to work around that question, look at it from many different aspects so that the show ultimately becomes a useful, powerful information vehicle for learning about democracy and understanding how America can work. For example, our question for this hour is going to be, has America lost its moral compass? What does morality have to do with democracy? What are those issues? And we're going to get to that in just a moment. But just to answer your question about Howard Dean was our governor here in Vermont for, I think, 10 years, 8 or 10 years. I've only lived in Vermont for 7, so he was the governor all the time that I've lived here. And I think he was an excellent governor. I've lived in Georgia. We lived in Atlanta for 16 years. We lived in Germany for a year, and I grew up in Michigan. So I've lived in those different places, and I've seen governors come and go in all of those places. And back when we lived in Michigan, I was relatively involved with politics for a while. A roommate of mine was a state representative. And very clear in my mind is the reality that Howard Dean was an excellent governor, that he kept his word, that he did what he said, that he made some friends and he made some enemies, because he was willing to make hard choices. And sometimes those hard choices offended people on the left, and sometimes they offended people on the right, but they were always the things that he thought were the best things for the state. And so, you know, in my personal opinion, he's a straight shooter, and I think that he's one of the best of the bunch out there. But it's, you know, at this point, that's just my personal opinion, and I'm not going to paint the show with it. So I just say that in answer to your question. I think Dean's a good guy, and I think that we all should keep a close eye on him, because he's going to go someplace. Enrique, I think it's pronounced Enrique. It might be Enrique, E-N-R-I-Q-U-E, from Santa Fe, says, Dear Tom, today's show was amazing. Can we get some of these statistics posted? All any Democrat would need to do in 2004 is use a transcript of this show as their platform to win. I'm assuming that he's talking about, or that you're talking, Enrique, about yesterday's program when we were citing the article from the New York Times, and that's where you'll find this. You can find it on their website, New York Times or nytimes.com. They archive 1 week's worth of news stories that you can download. At more than a week, you've got to pay them a couple dollars per download, as I recall. But you'll find this was a front page story in yesterday's New York Times. I don't have it in front of me now, but it was the headline was pretty obvious. You couldn't mistake it. It was about how the Bush tax cuts from the last cycle, from 2001-2002, are causing states all across the United States now to have to dump people from their health programs, in addition to many other consequences. But this was, we were talking about health care in that segment. So I would suggest that you track down the New York Times there. Bill from Hoffman Estates, Illinois, wrote about contracts being awarded on the good old buddy system in the USA. And this is relevant to our topic for today of, has America lost its moral compass? We'll get back to this in some more detail, Bill. But you make a good good point about the Iraqi oil reserves, and we'll get to that. And Jeannie from Hawaii says about Iraq, we shouldn't be reconstructing anything. The United Nations should be allowed to handle Iraq's reconstruction. Keep writing that to all your congresspeople over and over. Some of them already agree. We have to keep reminding them or get rid of them. And so thank you for sharing that with us, Jeannie. I appreciate the sentiment and the information. So has America lost its moral compass? You know, I'm sure you've probably heard by now, because it was all over the press. This is the kind of newsy fluff stuff that people love, in part because it's newsy fluff, and in part because there's actually a deeper truth underneath it. It brings out something that's a larger issue about the mayor in Mount Sterling, Iowa, a little town of 50 people, who wants to pass a law making it illegal for people to lie. And the article in the New York Times last Friday, there was the guy who killed a dozen deer with a bow and arrow. A dozen! And just last week, a couple of hunters trapped a mouse in their cabin so fat its tail weighed 3 pounds. A 3-pound tail! And they go on about all these tall tales that people have told in the place of Joe Hammett, the mayor of this tiny Fox River town in just north of the Missouri border. And I think he runs like a hunting supplies and convenience store sort of thing. This is a town with a population of 40. Although the article notes Mr. Hamlet counts 53 if you believe him, and they go on from there. So it's raised some interesting questions. Humans, of course, are guaranteed by the First Amendment the right to tell lies, and except under oath, except under certain circumstances. And the right to lie is one that is pretty important to life, because most relationships wouldn't function with it or without it. You know, how can we maintain normal social discourse? But these little white lies or tall tales about fishing stories, I don't think that these are the kinds of things that really get back to the issue of has America lost its moral compass. It's to get into that at some length, as the media has weeks. Over the last week. Instead, I think that we should be looking at some of the larger issues that have to do with morality. And what do we mean by morality in a democracy? Speaking of views that some people who wave the banner of morality say, this is about morality. You know, it's about fill in the blanks. Mostly issues that have to do with religion or sexuality have their place in the dialogue and discourse. The issue that I'm concerned about is what we hold as Americans. I would suggest yours, those values have been turned. A percentage of people, not a majority, but a significant percentage of people now have shifted away from the traditional American values of fairness and democracy and the classic idea on which this country was founded, the notion, you know, when Madison and Jefferson and Franklin looked at the Iroquois Confederacy, for example, or when they looked back at the Greek democracy or the Roman interactivity in the Roman Republic, they borrowed little pieces from all. But particularly Greek democracy and the Iroquois Confederacy, which in synthesis were what they built the Constitution of this country out of. When they looked at those things, they got it that there was this idea that one of the purposes of government was to provide for the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness of its citizens. And they chose those words very, very carefully. It wasn't just a throwaway line to toss into the Declaration of Independence. That government in common, that we all, by being a member of the society, that by being a citizen, we are voluntarily participating in that commons. And there are certain obligations and responsibilities that come with that voluntary participation, very real ones and very important ones, that are at the core of morality in a democracy. We'll be back in just a break. After this break, this is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Whether it's fair or not, people judge you by the words you use. In business and socially, your vocabulary and language skills tell everyone about your background, education, even your intelligence. That's why you need Verbal Advantage. While you listen, Verbal Advantage will give you the confidence that comes with a strong command of the English language. No more fumbling for the right word. No more embarrassment at how to express yourself. No more fear of using the wrong word. And it's so easy. To learn, you simply listen. When you want. Where you want. See why over 100,000 people have already gotten the verbal advantage they need for success.
To learn more about verbal advantage, call now. 1-800-444-1984. That's 444-1984. 1-800-444-1984.
Are you wondering how to prosper in our so-called muddle-through economy? Experts say that gold is now the buy option. Hi, I'm Christopher Kent, host of Antique Twist America, the company that's helping America. Now, I'm no expert on the economy or on gold, but I am an expert on antiques and collectibles. And Twist America is the leader in the United States collectible coin market, which has a very impressive track record over the past 30 years. But before you launch out into rare coins, the first step is to get educated. So please write this number down, 1-800-289-2646, which spells Bucoin. That's Bucoin. Ask for a free copy of The New Gold Rush. It'll help you understand this emerging gold rush so you can stake your claim and tell them Christopher Kent told you to call.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-neck geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Steven Sack, and I host the Employees Lawyer Show on IE America Radio Network. We take calls from people all over the United States, and we help them in their job problems. So if you ever wondered what job rights you have and how to fight back, I'm the guy to call.
Listen to Steven at his new time on Sundays from 9 a.m. until noon and rebroadcast from 9 p.m. till midnight.
For more information on my show or other shows on the IE America Radio Network, go to IEAmericaRadio.com. It's the best advice I can give.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, Taking Care of Business is that song. And taking care of business is something that is being done substantially now in the halls of Washington, D.C. As we look at this question of, has America lost its moral compass? The question is, are there times when it's a lie, or are there times when it's a simple deception? What is the core value of America, and how is that being changed? For example, we have a couple of days ago, this is from the White House, we have our president who is engaging in a little interesting mathematics here. Now, if you know how to divide by 10 or by 1,000, you know that a billion is 1,000 million, right? 1 billion equals 1,000 million. So 550 billion, if we were to make a million one, then 550 billion would be 550,000. Just keep that in mind. 1 is to 550,000 as 1 million is to 550 billion.
With a robust package of at least $550 billion and across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than a million new jobs by the end of 2004.
Now, you do the math on that. That's $550,000 per job. What kind of wild idea is this? And why isn't anybody in the press, or why isn't the president, for that matter, saying, you know, we think we ought to give corporations and wealthy people in America a $500,000 for every job that they create. I tell you, they give me a $500,000, I'll hire somebody in a heartbeat. I might even pay them $200,000, $300,000. Heck, I could pay them $450,000 and still make a good profit. Although I doubt that $450,000 jobs are going to be created by that $550,000 that's being given to the corporations to create job, to create one job. Is it moral that our politicians speak to us like this? Is it moral that our media ignores the obvious deceptions that are implicit in these sorts of things? This sort of thing, the obvious deceptions when Bush was saying, oh, you know, we're going into Iraq because of weapons of mass destruction, when back last September, Chalabi, the guy who we have now put in as the head of, or we're proposing to be the president of Iraq, was quoted in the Washington Post as saying that taking over Iraq would be great for the American oil companies. Where is the morality in this? The larger question, I think, has to do with the vision for America. What kind of vision are we holding for the United States? Are we holding a vision that this country should have a strong and broad middle class, and that those among us who are the least fortunate, the poorest, the least competent, by virtue of, in some cases, their own choices, and by virtue, in some cases, of stuff that they have absolutely no control over and nothing to do with, are we going to have a society that provides a modicum of comfort for all of its citizens? Or are we going to have a society in which it's pure dog-eat-dog, and the rich rise to the top, and the power aggregates in a few hands, and everybody else better start pedaling faster and faster and faster if they want to survive? Which of these visions is the vision for America? And I would suggest that these are the two contrasting views. This was the argument between Jefferson and Hamilton back in 1780 and 1790. This was the argument that led to the split between the Federalist Party of John Adams and Alexander Hamilton, when there was only one party in the United States, and the creation of the Democratic-Republican Party by Thomas Jefferson, which then later became called the Democratic Party, is today called the Democratic Party, and that split. We'll be right back.
And now, our motivational speaker, Carl!
Who's ready to reach the inner winner?
Allergies have your sinuses congested? Afrin No Drip Nasal Spray starts to relieve congestion instantly. Sudafed takes up to 30 minutes to start working. And after 4 hours, Afrin still does a better job keeping nasal passages open.
This is the Tom Hart.
Now I feel like a winner.
Breathe better.
Four.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton. Tens of thousands of janitors around the U.S. will see their union contracts expire tonight at midnight, raising the prospect of strikes in three states and the District of Columbia. Janitors in the nation's capital say they'll launch a series of rolling strikes next week unless they win full-time work and health care. Janitors in Los Angeles, meanwhile, are fighting to maintain their employer-paid health insurance while working to improve upon wages that average only $19,000 a year. And in neighboring Orange County, janitors are hoping to win family health insurance while improving on poverty wages.
In Orange County, which is a wealthy county just south of L.A. County, the janitors there are paid about $15,500 a year.
Elizabeth Brennan of the Service Employees International Union says such low pay keeps custodians from owning their own homes.
Housing in Orange County is expensive, and so what most janitors do is double or triple up with other families. Many live in converted garages, run-down small studio apartments.
Contracts for janitors also expire tonight in Sacramento, San Jose, Portland, Oregon, and Cleveland, Ohio.
Workers at a banana plantation in northern Panama are buying the plantation from Chiquita Brands International. The 7,400-acre plantation is being sold to the workers for $20 million. Two-thirds of the money will be invested in Panamanian banks, and the remaining third will go to a bank in Ohio, where Chiquita is headquartered. However, the workers may have bought a one-way ticket to indentured servitude. Their plantation has lost nearly $100 million in the last 6 years, and the purchase agreement requires the workers to exclusively sell their banana crops to Chiquita for the next 10 years. Chiquita controls nearly 90% of Panama's banana production.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
Hello, this is Andy Dave Rush inviting you to join the fun on Home Improvement USA. Great guests and experts offer home improvement advice and keep us updated on new products and technologies. On Home Improvement USA, we give away terrific prizes to all our callers. Join me, Handy Dave, along with Ken Walchek on location at Clark Devon Hardware in Chicago and engineer and handyman Jay Brentlinger for Home Improvement USA. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific on Saturday. Don't miss it, Home Improvement USA.
We broadcast it on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I hear something saying,
that's the sound of the man working on the chain gang. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, broadcasting live world-to-world on the IE America Radio Network over the Internet, on the Sirius Satellite, Channel 145, and on terrestrial stations from the Rockies to the Atlantic. Our question today is, has America lost its moral compass? If you'd like to discuss the issue, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. And Greenith, I think it is, G-R-E-E-N-I-N-T-H, Greenith, just popped into our chat room at TomHartman.com and said, what do you think about Kucinich versus Dean? It's a little bit off topic, but we started out answering some of these questions, and I really appreciate your coming in there and sending us that note. My personal thoughts are that they both bring a lot to the table. Both of these men bring tremendous new ideas and vitality to the Democratic Party, and I hope that there's a for a renaissance in the Democratic Party. I continue to believe that there's a possibility that it's possible that the party as an institution can turn away from its corporate paymasters. and that it doesn't just become Republican light. Harry Truman said, who was a Democrat, Harry Truman said that when voters are offered a choice between a Republican and a Democrat who behaves like a Republican, they'll vote for the Republican every time. And I think that's very true, and I think that that's one of the problems that the Democratic Party is confronting. But we'll do a whole show on this one of these days soon here. But for right now, back to, has America lost its moral compass? What is the agenda of the neoconservative group? It's pretty straightforward, and again, it's one that I think that they view as a positive for America. And then there's the historic view of America, and it's this collision of the two then has created this kind of culture war that has brought about people staking out positions on both sides that in many cases just plain old flat out are not honest. These positions don't have integrity. We have Dr. Robert Schachitz?
It's Schachitz. S-H-A-K-I-T.
Thank you very much, Dr. Schachitz, on the line. He's a management consultant and organizational psychologist advising many Fortune 500 companies on the issue of trust. Dr. Schachitz, in this era of politicians lying to us on right across the spectrum, how do we recover trust in public dialogues?
Well, we have to dig our way a little bit further than we've ever had to before. As long as we suspect that they have indeed been lying to us and we have evidence that they lied to us, it just makes us more cynical than we were before. And so some people stay more permanently in the cynical view that I won't trust them as far as I can throw them, and some will just take a little bit longer to come around.
This is one of my big concerns, is that so many people, you know, for example, they listen to George Bush saying that, you know, he wants a $550 billion tax cut because that's going to create a million jobs. Yet, if you do the math on that, that's $550,000 per job. So, you know, I have a small corporation. If he gave me $550,000, I'd hire somebody for, you know, whatever. I mean, hire him for minimum wage, $10,300 a year. People just, you know, do the simple math on this and go, wait a minute, this guy's not telling me the truth. There's another agenda here. And how do you, I am concerned that so many people are becoming so cynical about the American political process that they're not participating, that the people who don't vote are the largest single block of voters.
Mm.
How in America can we respond to this?
Mm. Well, I guess it's the same concern about faith in any leader. As long as we have leaders who we do not feel are credible, then we feel powerless. We're just going to drop out. I could answer more about, you know, what, how can we have a feeling of assessing credibility, so I can go back a step and think about, let me see, are our leaders credible? The two things you look for when you're looking at trust and credibility, you're looking for, do I trust their competency and do I trust their intent? And their competency is assessed by what they're supposed to do for us. Are they good enough? And they know what they're talking about, or the, you know, are they capable? And maybe that's a problem in itself there. The other one, though, it seems to be even more important typically, is do I trust their intent? That is, do they have my best interest at heart, or are they? Do they have an interest that's more linked with them, their family, and their friends?
Yeah, John Adams back long ago, 1789, as I recall, said that the purpose of government should not be to inure to the benefit of any one man or class of men. That, you know, and boy, have we seen that go down the tubes in the last 50 years or so. I mean, ever since Dwight Eisenhower's warning about the military-industrial complex and not just that. I mean, just this whole kind of commercial takeover of discourse in America. Dr. Schachitz, you have a website?
I do. And it's very appropriately labeled Recapturing the Trust. And so it is, in fact, www.recapturingthetrust.com. That's great. The name of my first book I wrote about 2.5 years ago, R-E-C-A-P-T-U-R-I-N-G, thetrust1word.com.
Great. And your latest book is The 7 Conditions of Trust. Dr. Schachitz, thank you very much for being on the program with us today. I really appreciate your being available.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks. Now back to the neoconservative agenda. What is, and See, this, I think this comes back to the issue, and our question here, has America lost its moral compass? Perhaps, perhaps not. Maybe we just have got a different one. Maybe we, maybe we've acquired a different one. William Greider in the Nation this month has this extraordinary article in which he basically outlines, and this isn't any secret. I mean, you can find this, you can find it in Newt Gingrich's Contract on America. You can find it right, it's just, this is all just right out in the open. Defining the conservative, the neoconservative agenda. This is not the conservative agenda of Dwight Eisenhower. This is the, what at one time was the conservative agenda, perhaps, of Harding, and is now the neo, and was Reagan's agenda, and Newt Gingrich's agenda, and now is Bush's agenda. And he just goes through these items. Eliminating federal taxation on private capital as the essential predicate for dismantling a progressive income tax, number one. Number two, gradually phasing out the pension fund retirement system as we know it, starting with Social Security, and breaking up the huge public employee funds and converting them into individualized accounts. Number three, withdrawing the federal government from a direct role in housing, health care, assistance to the poor, and many other long-established social priorities. Number four, restore churches to a more influential role by using public money. Number five, strengthen the hand of business enterprise against burdensome regulatory obligations, especially environmental protection, by making these protections voluntary and what's called, quote, market-driven. And number six, smash organized labor. These are, you know, this is the agenda of the neoconservative right, and they're not hiding it. I mean, this isn't like, you know, some revelation. And they fly in the face of and absolutely contradict the agenda that was put forth by Roosevelt in the 30s and into the early 40s and carried on by Truman and Kennedy and LBJ and Jimmy Carter of a, and I would say Eisenhower as well, of a more compassionate view of America, a concerned view of America, an idea that we're all in this together. And as it is with tribal people around the world, if any of us is sick, all of us are sick. If any of us is homeless, all of us are homeless. This is the vision of the founders of this country. And this is the vision, I believe, that most Americans hold, that most Americans are fundamentally fair and they are concerned about their fellow person and they do subscribe to Judeo-Christian values. And the parallels across the spectrum in other religions as well, and that we are in some regards our brother's keeper, and it's not about, you know, grabbing power over others. It's about making this a world in which we want to live. I remember after Reagan cut funding to mental hospitals in the United States in order to help pay for his Star Wars program, and because his tax cuts had, you know, started the deficit so high, he had to start slashing social programs. And in big cities around America, and I used to travel a lot back then, in big cities around America, suddenly there were all these homeless people on the streets that had never been there before. In the 1960s, I hitchhiked all the way, you know, from Michigan to San Francisco and back, and from Texas to California, you know, all over the United States. I as a kid, you know, and I had visited much of America on the ground, and we didn't have homeless people. And now they're like, you know, what does this do to the quality of life of even the rest of us, much less people who are homeless? This is the Tom Hartman Program. Our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937 if you'd like to comment. So, total federal taxes, as we get into this issue of what is the morality of the neoconservative agenda versus what is the morality of a more progressive or liberal agenda, and what really, ultimately, I think the bigger question is, what is the morality of the middle of America, the what I call the radical middle, that is pretty much all of the rest of us? Has America lost its moral compass? Tax Facts and Fantasies, an article in the U.S. News and World Report, April 28th, says, total federal taxes, this is by Jody Allen, total federal taxes, including payroll, excise, and others, take a smaller share of most taxpayers' incomes than in any year since 1979. And for a family of four in the middle income range, They forked over less of their income to the feds than since 1957. The big bulk of families now pay more in payroll taxes than in income taxes, end quote. Income taxes are mostly paid by those making over $80,000 a year. Payroll taxes constitute the largest tax paid by people making under $81,000 a year. And according to the IRS, so this is the back to the U.S. News and World Report's story, Tax Facts and Fantasies by Jody Allen. The latest Internal Revenue Service data show that by 2000, the top 1% of households reaped 21% of national income. The CBO found that between 1979 and 1997, that group, that top 1%, had their income increased by 157% to a record high. Now, there's also an anomaly, an artifact in these numbers. Very often you'll hear neoconservatives say, well, the top 20% means that you make more than $85,000 a year. Or the top 10% means that you make more than $132,000. They use these numbers from the IRS. The problem is that the IRS's statistics are weird because, and this is no secret, by the way, to anybody in government, and it's been this way for years and years, because the IRS counts anybody who has an income of greater than $1 million as having an income of $1 million for the purposes of compiling statistics. In other words, Bill Gates, whose personal income is equal to that of the 46%, the bottom 46% of Americans, one man, Bill Gates' income, when the IRS is calculating the top 10% of income earners, they consider him to have $1 million, not his billions and billions. Because back when they first started doing the statistical analysis, they were using these old UNIVAC computers with vacuum tubes and whatnot, and the computers couldn't count to a billion. Or they couldn't divide to a billion. I don't know. There was some mathematical problem. So they simply said, anybody who has an income of over $1 million, we'll simply call them millionaires. And so as a result, the real numbers are almost impossible to get. But we know that these numbers that say, well, the top 20% is people who make over $80,000, the top 10% is people who make over $130,000, they're absolute nonsense. And yet, they are being trotted out constantly by saying, on the one hand, oh, we want to give a tax cut to the rich. Oh, and by the way, you are the rich. But somehow, you don't end up with the tax cut. So, you know, what's this about? 92 million Americans... for example, the administration says, back to U.S. News and World Report, this article says 92 million Americans will receive an average tax cut of $1,083, according to the administration. How to explain the administration's boast? In fact, the article says the Urbings Brookings Tax Policy Center, nearly 70% of filers would get $500 or less, while those earning $1 million or more would average over $90,000. Or what about the claim that this is going to help the elderly, when it's actually only going to help the 19% of the elderly who have incomes over $75,000? I'm paraphrasing now. Or, well, here's a quote. Or that our troops in Iraq need a break when, computes John Hopkins economist Christopher Carroll, less than a quarter of 1% of the tax cut would flow to military families in total. Have we lost our connection to reality? Have we lost our connection to morality in the United States? Here's another. This is a wild one. Molly Ivins wrote a great article. You can find it all over the web. I found it on the Working for Change, the Working Assets website, from Creators Syndicate. I think it's also on commondreams.org. She points out that the administration has put forth a rule change, and the Republicans in both the House and Senate have put forward laws that would do away with the 40-hour work week. She says, consider the Family Time and Workplace Flexibility Act, Senate version, and the Family Time Flexibility Act, House version. The Bush administration is leading the charge with proposed new rules that will erode the 40-hour work week and affect more than 80 million workers now protected by the Fair Labor Standards Act. And the phrasing of these laws is about freedom and freedom of choice. Well, the freedom and freedom of choice is the freedom of choice of the employer. What these laws will do are, well, here, these two bills would Bang. Exclude previously protected workers who are entitled to overtime by reclassifying them as managers. Eliminate certain middle-income workers from overtime protections by adding an income limit. We'll get to that right after this break. And remove overtime protections from large numbers of people in some of the major defense industries in the United States. We'll be covering this and more when we come back after this break. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines!
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
Quit smoking in 7 days? Now you can with Release HD, the all-natural homeopathic medicine now available without a prescription, designed to break your addiction to nicotine in just 7 days guaranteed. Listen to what internationally recognized Dr. Richard Cohen has to say about Release HD.
The beauty of the homeopathic medicine in the Release HD system is that it deals with the suffering, eases the withdrawal symptoms, and can take away the jitters. I strongly recommend Release HD to anyone who wants to quit smoking.
It's never too late to stop. The Release HD system goes to work immediately, stopping nicotine cravings, irritability, and withdrawals. Release HD is different from gums and patches because it works from the inside out, giving your body the nutrients it needs to break free. You can quit. Do it the easy way with Release HD.
Call Release HD now for your free trial offer. 1-800-519-5717 and quit smoking for good in 7 days guaranteed. Do it today with Release HD. 1-800-519-5717. That's 1-800-519-5717. Call now.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
We have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune into Animal Talk this Sunday.
Sunday. Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Come on!
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking about, has America lost its moral compass? There's an op-ed piece, an opinion piece in today's Wall Street Journal. It's called an Oil for People program. And there's a sentence in here that just perfectly captures this clash of worldviews that we're talking about. The article is about proposals that are being put forward about how do we handle the oil that's in Iraq so that it doesn't all end up, you know, just profits to some company. Some of it ends up in the hands of the Iraqi people. And yet, you know, should it be handled by the government of Iraq, or should it be handled by ExxonMobil, or should it be handled by the United States government? Or, I mean, there's all these dueling theories and ideas that are being put forth. And in endorsing broadly two of the ideas that have been put forth in this Wall Street Journal op-ed piece, they're suggesting basically that this should all be handled by private corporations. And here's the sentence. This is from an Oil for People program by Susan Lee in today's Wall Street Journal. Susan Lee says, quote, "This proposal cuts out the government and thus reduces opportunities for waste, graft, and corruption," end of quote. Now, the last time I looked, we lived in a democracy where the government was answerable to its people. Now, I know there are many who would argue that we are moving away from that, and I have many of those same concerns myself. But nonetheless, at least in theory, and I think in large part in practical reality, the United States is a democratic republic defined by its constitution where our elected officials are answerable to us. And, yeah, sure, there have been abuses. I mean, Mayor Daley's machine in Chicago is the one everybody likes to point to. But such things, particularly with local politics, they've happened all over the country. But then, Senator Pothole, Al D'Amato in New York. I mean, people argue, well, they're just giving people what they want. But corporations are answerable to nobody. Nobody votes for them. So what prevents graft and corruption in corporations? The answer? Nothing. Look at what happened with Enron. Is this who we want to hand all this over to? I think not. So, anyhow, the idea, democracy. Democracy works. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. President Bush will address the nation tomorrow night to announce major hostilities in Iraq are now over. He'll speak from the USS Abraham Lincoln off the coast of California starting at about 9 o'clock Eastern. He's expected to touch on the security of the United States along with the liberation, reconstruction, and future security of Iraq. A White House spokesman says the comments will not signal a legal end to all hostilities as Allied forces continue to give and take fire. The president is scheduled to fly to San Diego, where he will then transfer from Air Force One to the ship. The end of the war in Iraq, meanwhile, will likely also spell good news for the U.S. economy. That at least the word today from Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan.
In addition, businesses should see some relief from the pressure on profit margins that had developed in recent months as energy prices rose sharply. An improvement on this front could be a positive development for capital spending.
Testifying before the House Financial Services Committee, Greenspan expressed confidence the economy seems poised for a rebound, he said, and he also expects the second half of the year to see the economy recover at a, quote, noticeably better pace than the past year. The leader of the Islamic group Hamas is rejecting the new U.S.-backed roadmap for peace between Israelis and Palestinians. Abdelaziz Mantisi says attacks against Israel will continue.
We are still under occupation and we are fighting for independence. Freedom, and we said as long as there is occupation, Palestinians will continue their resistance to put an end for the aggression, oppression of Israelis against our people.
Another leader, Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, also says there will be no let-up in those attacks on Israel. Yassin says the plan will, quote, liquidate the Palestinian cause. The pair made their comments just before the presentation of the peace plan to Israeli and Palestinian leaders after a new Palestinian cabinet under Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas was sworn in. Only hours before Abbas took office, another suicide attack hit Tel Aviv. Abbas is pledging to halt what he calls the armed chaos carried out by militant groups he says have set back the implementation of a Palestinian state.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Hello, Dental Group. Ms. Cole? Sounds like a nasty toothache. Aren't you on vacation?
Camping.
Well, for temporary relief until you see the dentist, get maximum strength Ambisol.
Ambisol?
The same pain reliever in the same strength the dentist rubs on gums to start relieving pain on contact.
Really?
You can't get stronger pain relief without a prescription. Use only as directed.
Ambisol.
Yes, Miss Cole. Maximum strength Ambisol. Dent is strong, so the pain is gone.
Federal regulators are ordering tougher security at the nation's nuclear plants to safeguard against terrorism. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission says it's approved three security orders, including two that involve the training and qualifications of security guards hired to protect those plants. Those orders do take effect immediately. After nearly 3 weeks of a testimony from 31 witnesses in the country's first trial resulting from the investigation into the September 11th attacks, federal prosecutors rested their case yesterday. That case hangs mainly on the testimony of government informant Yousef Mimsa, who said his one-time roommates ran a terrorist sleeper cell based in Detroit.
All right, folks, while we have a minute, let's go up to the chopper with Brad Powell, get a traffic update. Brad, what do you see up there?
Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Nothing you're going to want to hear about, unfortunately. You can expect major delays on the interstate. An overturned tractor trailer's got traffic backed up for about 25 miles. It's a real bad situation, Scott, but I do have good news.
What's that, Brad?
I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See how much you could save. Visit Geico.com. Geico, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
British Prime Minister Tony Blair is urging everyone involved in the Northern Ireland peace process to do whatever is necessary to push that peace forward. Blair says everyone involved already knows what they have to do.
There has to be a complete cessation of all paramilitary activity of whatever nature, and then a process so that we can put all the arms in Northern Ireland beyond use. And every single party has got to be committed to that. If they're not committed to that, it's going to be very difficult to reconstitute the Northern Ireland government in the way that we want.
Sinn Féin President Gerry Adams agreed with Blair and said the IRA will do its part to end the conflict.
The IRA leadership makes it clear in its statement that it is determined that its activities will be consistent with its resolve to see the complete and final closure of the conflict. Furthermore, the IRA leadership is determined that there will be no activities which will undermine in any way the peace process and the Good Friday Agreement.
Elections and a new power-sharing executive are due to be held at the end of May, but they're currently in doubt as well. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Yesterday, in Brakes 101, master cylinders, calipers, and pads were demystified. You learned they are a lot like hearts, muscles, and skin, all designed to stop cars and save lives. When I come back, it's Brakes 102.
Doug is frugal.
Well, money doesn't grow on trees, you know.
The problem is, Doug is about to buy a used car.
Yep, and I'm gonna get ripped off!
And Doug doesn't know about Carfax, which lets you check a used car's history to see if it's been in an accident, has accurate mileage, stuff like that. So you know your money's well spent.
So I might save thousands?
Exactly, Doug. Just go to CARFAX.com or ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report.
Hey, how about we go halfsies on the car?
How about nunsies?
How about sumsies?
No. Carfax, the truth about used cars.
Welcome to Brakes 102 at Car Clinic College. Today's lesson, analog braking systems, or ABS. Ever press the brake and nothing? You just pumped and hoped for the best? Hope no more. The best is here. Computer-controlled ABS. This system monitors the speed of individual wheels and applies precise braking power to each. And if any brake starts to lock or slows at a different rate than the others, that specific brake is automatically pumped or pulsed to prevent lockup. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to the Tom Hartman program, with thanks to Steph, our board operator extraordinaire this afternoon. And we're broadcasting live from coast to coast, from the Atlantic to the Pacific, from the... Oh, what do you call that? The Arctic Ocean to the equator on the Sirius satellite, on terrestrial radio stations across the United States, and beaming on the IE America, www.ieamericaradio.com website. And you'll find a link to that off www.tomhartman.com. And Mark in Dallas is on the line. Wanted to say hello. Hello, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Well, I've been better. I told Steph, I guess, wasn't quite sure where you were going today on the program, and could offer some observations. First, let me interject this. If the question is, have we lost our moral compass, my answer is definitively yes.
Yeah.
Some observations would be, I'll start with personal, then I'll kind of go more general. I've been unemployed now for 35 months. Two college degrees, former naval officer, commercial pilot, and I know many of the people in the same boat that I am in. So the impression is that when you're out of work that long, you come to the conclusion that the United States is no longer about taking care of its citizens and trying to build a better society. The United States is about each person is individually in it alone, and we're all in competition with each other.
Yeah.
And it becomes painfully clear when you go through the interviewing process at a professional level.
You know, Mark.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry. Let me finish your thought there.
Well, I was going to add just another observation, and I have lots of observations I could provide, but When I got my MBA back in the mid-90s, what do you think the first thing they taught us when we walked in the door?
I don't know.
Well, it goes along with your book, Unequal Protection, actually, which I'd recommend to all the listeners. It's a very good book.
Bless you, Mark.
Yeah, well, it is. You did a good job on that. Anyway, the first thing they taught us when walking the door is they said, well, you guys are going to be working your MBA and going out in corporate America, and what do you think your primary responsibility is? Oh, we don't know. Maximization of shareholder wealth.
Right.
It's drilled into you from day one.
Yeah, and it's not just drilled in business school. The Supreme Court has ruled that if a director of a corporation or if an executive of a corporation behaves in a way overtly and intentionally that doesn't enhance shareholder wealth, they may be guilty of a crime.
You got it.
So, it's very much there. Mark, the earlier point you made about being unemployed and the idea that America isn't about taking care of its people anymore.
Mm-hmm.
In this hour, I want to kind of shift the topic over to is democracy served by censorship, either by corporations or government? But I think that actually one of the things that I was going to talk about in the context of that just fits perfectly with what you were talking about, which is the idea that, and I was going to put it in the context of this, you know, aggregation of media, but it's the idea that Charles Darwin said that the fittest would survive.
Mm-hmm.
And if you actually read Origin of the Species, as David Loy has done, who's the head of the Darwin Project, he's the husband of Rhianne Eisler, who wrote The Chalice and the Blade and a number of other brilliant books, and David himself is an author and a college professor, he points out that the phrase survival of the fittest only exists once in Origin of Species by Darwin, and in that one context, it's not saying that it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Darwin is actually kind of warning about it, and the words like compassion and love and cooperation appear hundreds of times in Origin of the Species. And David's working on a book called Darwin's Lost Theory of Love, and that what was going on was that Darwin was writing back in the 19th century when there were all of these kind of neo-pseudo-Victorian economists who wanted a rationalization for trickle-down economics, for the idea that if the rich got richer and richer, that the crumbs would fall off the table and take care of the hungry masses, and that was just fine, thank you very much. That's how things should be. And in fact, that's not what Darwin was suggesting. Darwin was suggesting something very different. If you apply the logic of survival of the fittest to its logical extreme end, you'd have to ask the question, was Nazi Germany better than Poland?
Right.
Because they were apparently more fit. They beat them in a nanosecond, you know. And I think any reasonable person would say, no, Nazi Germany was not more fit than Poland or Czechoslovakia or, you know, and the list goes on. And
But I think you could also apply that, just going back to Darwin, just in my own lay readings, there are many examples in nature where aggregate or group behavior designed to support a large population is a preferred mode of behavior because it provides benefits to the group as opposed to, quote-unquote, the lone hunter view of animals in nature.
Mark, let me share with you something here that is going to just, you know, right to what you're speaking here. This is from The New Scientist, and let's see what's the date on this. I don't have the date on it. It's from the New Scientist website, and New Science. Oh, it's January of 03, the 8th of January 03. Democracy wins hands down over despotism when it comes to making choices in an animal group, according to a new model of collective decisions. And what these folks did was they started out with the assumption that in herding animals that there would be the alpha male, right? There would be the super powerful one that would come out. And that's the mythology that we all hold about all mammals, all non-human mammals, right? That there's this alpha male or the alpha female in some species, like with wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And the assumption is that alpha one gets to make all the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found was that when a group is together, the alpha can go off in any old direction it wants, and the group won't follow it.
Mm-hmm.
And members of the group will start to wander off a few to the west and a few to the east and a few to the south. And once a critical threshold is reached, and the critical threshold for most mammals seems to be about 50% of the group,
mm-hmm.
once just a little over 50% of the group moves in a particular direction, the whole rest of the group then follows along. Mm-hmm. In other words, decision-making by virtually all mammals is done in a democratic context. And this is just, you know, this is the headline is Democracy Beats Despotism in the Animal World. And they say this is just an amazing thing. She said the last paragraph, this is referenced out of Nature, which is one of the top science journals in the world. She does not think the model will tell us much about the merits of democracy in a human society, but says it challenges, I think it does, but says it challenges the popular perception that the natural world is run by dominance and violence.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lead author says, quote, democracy is not something that humanity invented, end of quote. Isn't that cool?
That's a great quote.
I think that's so great. Mark, thank you very much for calling in today.
Take care. You too.
I really appreciate you joining the Tom Hartman program here and participating with us. So our question for this hour is democracy served by censorship, either by corporations or by government? By government censorship or corporate censorship, do either one of them have a role in furthering the mission of democracy, or do they retard it? Is government served by either corporate or government? Is democracy served by either corporate or government censorship? And let's look at some of the things that are going on here. On March 18th, last month, federal judge Lloyd George ordered Irwin Schiff to stop selling his book, which had been in print for over 13 years. He had recently begun advertising the book nationally. This guy, Irwin Schiff, just was ordered by a federal judge not to sell his book anymore. Well, you would think, well, it must be a book of pornographic pictures or dirty stories. You said, no, there's no pornography in the book. None. Well, it must be a call to overthrow the government of the United States. No, it wasn't. It was a book that is titled The Federal Mafia that Schiff claims is about the history of the IRS. And this news story on newswithviews.com says, the Internal Revenue Service generated the action against Schiff. The IRS also wants Schiff to end any public speaking on the tax laws in the United States. And their comment is that the government's action violates his First Amendment right to publish and speak, whether or not his advice to taxpayers is correct. This reminds me of a startling incident that just stands out in my memory. Back in 1969, 1970, right around then, I was a reporter for WITL, AM and FM in Lansing, Michigan. I worked for a number of stations in that market, WVIC, WJIM-TV. Anyhow, I was working at WITL and was running the newsroom. And these three guys came in suits. There were two or three of us. There was the DJ who was on the air. I was in the newsroom, and the engineer was hanging around. And then there was the staff of the station. And this guy came in. These three guys came in, and along with them came a couple of the station management folks. And they flipped out federal ID, and they wanted to know who was running the newsroom. And I said it was me. And they said that they were going to be conducting a bust in a city about 60 or 70 miles away from us of some tax protesters, tax resistors. And they were going to burst into their home, arrest them, haul them off. There was a total of, I don't remember the number now, but what sticks in my head was like about 20 people were going to be arrested. It was going to be a mass arrest. And they said, and we would appreciate it if you did not report this story, because we don't want to give these people a podium. We don't want to publicize their point of view. And my immediate response was to say, wait a minute, we live in a free society. But before a word could get out of my mouth, after this first guy said, we don't want you to publicize this, the other guy standing next to him said to me, may I see your driver's license, please? And he said it in this very, you know, threatening tone of voice, very, very, you know, give it now. I mean, it's hard to recreate, but you can imagine. And so I pulled out my wallet and I handed it to him, and he starts writing down all the stuff on my driver's license. And then the third guy goes to the other people in the room. We got like four or five spectators in the room now of people who worked at the radio station, and the DJ had come in to see what was going on. He had a record going on. And he's collecting their driver's licenses from all of these people and writing down their addresses and their driver's license numbers. And the guy didn't have to ask again if we would not run that story. I'm embarrassed to say. We were all totally intimidated. These guys left, and the story never ran. And this is just a personal story. I can't say that this has happened a lot. It might have only happened once in the history of the United States, and it just happened to happen to me. Or not. Who knows? But here's this guy whose book has been canned. Federal judge has ordered his book not to be sold. Is democracy served by censorship, either by governments or corporations? Let's look at some of the dimensions of this that have to do with corporate democracy as well. But actually, here's another government. Bill Nevins, a 10th grade humanities teacher at Rio Nacho Rancho High School, was placed on administrative leave as a teacher. Why? Because one of his students read a poem. It was not an obscene poem. We'll come back with this right after this break. This is the Tom Hartman Show on the IE America radio program. If you'd like to call, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. We'll be right back.
Daddy, can't we read a different book tonight?
Shh. We're just getting to the good part. To set the correct throttle position, loosen the pinch bolt to rotate the governor arm.
Have a passion for fixing things? Sears has over 4.5 million parts for all major brands of lawn equipment and home appliances. Call 1-800-4-MY-HOME. Click on Sears.com or come into a Sears Parts and Repair Center. Where can you find parts for all major brands, no matter where you bought them? Sears. Where else?
You're strapped into 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Use as directed.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to animal talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. It's about 25 minutes after the hour, and we're talking about, is democracy served by censorship, either of the corporate or the governmental variety? I'm suggesting it's not. In fact, in our Bill of Rights for the 21st Century, which you'll find on our website at tomhartman.com, number two is, we own our government and our commons. That is, it is us, we are it. And there are certainly things that it's appropriate, I think, for governments to keep secret, you know, military issues, things that have to do with security, certainly. But censorship broadly, is this a useful thing? Let's look at some of the things that are happening here. Bill Nevins, a 10th grade humanities teacher at Rio Rancho High School, was placed on administrative leave as a teacher in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The suspension occurred after Courtney Butler, a senior high school student, read her poem over the school's closed-circuit TV system. The principal also disbanded the writing club and the poetry team because a student read a poem. Now, what kind of poem would inspire such a response? If you have a thought on this, we're at 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Similarly, or not similarly, but along the same lines of censorship, in November of 2002, the Pentagon, this is incredible, the Pentagon says to a reporter who files a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit against the Pentagon, asking to see a videotape that the Pentagon produced. The Pentagon says, we're not going to show you this videotape because it's so secret. Now, what's the videotape? The videotape is called, it's a 22-minute video produced for the Pentagon. It's called, quote, Freedom of Information Act, the People's Right to Know, end quote. It's a videotape that the Pentagon produced to instruct its employees in how to respond to Freedom of Information Act requests. And they said to this reporter, sorry, we're not going to let you see this thing, and even if you sue us, we're not going to let you see it. Whoa! Where have we gone here? Where have we gone? What is going on? We're putting teachers on administrative leave and disbanding poetry classes because a child in a classroom reads a poem that talked about politics. It wasn't about sexuality. It wasn't about, anti-religion. It wasn't anti any group. It was about politics. And this guy nearly loses his job. The poetry club gets dissolved. What has America come to? Of course, you know, back May 30th of last year, the Department of Justice announced new guidelines. This is following up on the Patriot Act that will give FBI agents greater latitude to monitor internet sites, libraries, and religious institutions without offering any evidence of even potential criminal activity. And on it goes. John in North Carolina wants to discuss how I am being unpatriotic. Great, John. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you today?
Well, I don't know the specifics of that case, but, you know, I can understand why the principal would want to do that. Schools aren't supposed to be meant for political discussion. I mean, they're just there to learn the basics. And
you mean like the basics of democracy?
Well, you know, they can learn democracy, you know, and there's history class and stuff. But what I'm talking about is if you're reading a poem that doesn't support the troops, it could teach the kids that the war is not a necessarily good thing, and they might
I didn't say this poem didn't support the troops. I think it might have been a poem supporting Al Gore.
Well, same thing.
Same thing. You don't think there should be poems supporting Al Gore? Hold on the line here, John. We'll be right back after this break. It's going to take about 3 minutes, but hang on. We'll continue talking. This is Tom Hartman on IE America Radio.
I have a question for the men out there. What do you think your odds are of developing prostate problems? 1 in 1,000? 1 in 300? Actually, my doctor told me they're 1 in 3. But you can help beat those odds with One A Day Men's Health Formula. One A Day Men's is a complete multivitamin with 21 nutrients plus lycopene, which Harvard studies have linked to prostate health. So now that you know your risk, help beat the odds. Take One A Day Men's Health, the multivitamin with more for your health.
A new report looks at how coral reefs are doing in U.S. waters. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Coral reefs are fragile ecosystems. The U.S. government recently completed its first comprehensive study of reefs in U.S. waters. Tim Keeney says Congress commissioned the study in response to growing concern over the condition of coral reefs. Keeney is a top administrator with the federal government's National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Over the last 10 years or so, people have noticed, and scientists have certainly noticed, a change in coral reefs. We've lost over 30% of their healthy reef structure in the Florida Keys. We've had various bleaching events where coral actually turns white and looks like it's dead. And because of that, Congress has been quite responsive in providing funding to go out and do a study of basically the health of coral reefs.
Keeney says major threats to the reefs include pollution and physical damage from fishing boats, swimmers, and scuba divers. He says until now, scientists had a lot of information about small sections of coral reefs, but no thorough picture of the reefs in their entirety.
The beauty of this report is that it allows us to put together a report card on the health of U.S. reefs. It will give us a baseline with regards to the existing condition now and a way to compare in the future any changes to that condition so that we can very accurately determine what's happening to these reefs over time.
The United States has several coral reef systems within its jurisdiction. Some of them are off the coast of Florida, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Others are off the coast of Hawaii and other islands in the Pacific Ocean. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
More united we stand, divided we fall. And if our backs should ever be against the wall, we'll be together, together,
USA. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. There is no doubt in my mind that the vast majority of people in the United States, whether they call themselves conservatives or liberals, progressives or neocons, Republicans or Democrats, independents or non-voters want a secure, safe America, that they want a country where the highest values are upheld, where people have a decent quality of life. I mean, it really boils down to that. What I think are competing are these worldviews about how to accomplish that. I think it's a legitimate competition or debate, as it were, and you're getting my point of view on this, of course. Justin in Tennessee wants to follow up on the conversation I was having with John just a moment ago. Justin, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. This is my first time calling.
Well, pleased to have you here.
I do listen to Sirius Left all the time, but I had recently started listening to OutQ, the new stream, and so I hadn't gotten back, and you had gotten on this show, and I had never heard you before. But I wanted to comment on this poem. Mm-hmm. In New Mexico and how everything was disbanded, the poetry group and literary was it the literary magazine or
it was the writing club and the poetry club
yeah,
and I was going to come out of
I'm just discussing my outrage at how this could happen. I don't know, and especially it being nothing, you know, obscene or anything, and I mean, surely she would have had to have permission anyway to do this over the closed circuit television. I don't. Is this something that the principal just later decided that he would?
I think the reason why the teacher was in trouble is mm-hmm. because the teacher should vet things. And I agree. You've got kids in a school, and if they're going to present something to the whole school, it should be vetted by somebody. Somebody should say, you know, is this appropriate for kids? Because there certainly are things that kids can say and read that aren't appropriate. I guess the question is it appropriate to discuss the issues of the day in the context of art? Because art has always historically been a vehicle for bringing out
oneself.
Yeah, well, not just expressing oneself, for expressing oneself in the context of the culture that one's surrounded by and the events of the moment. I mean, look at the art that came out of the Great Depression. Look at the art that came out of the Civil War. Look at the
and
art
they
that
speak
came...
volumes. You know,
oh, it's extraordinary. Just extraordinary. So, should we be encouraging our children in our public schools in their art, whether it's poetry or painting or whatever, to bring up and process, because they're certainly struggling with these issues just as adults are,
and
process the issues of the day or not.
I wanted to comment on your previous caller that was saying, you know, they're there to learn the basics. And yes, that's true. I graduated in 2001. I'm a recent high school graduate. And luckily, I went to a very liberal high school, public high school in Memphis, Tennessee at that. And we had a Young Democrats and Young Republicans group, and nothing was censored. And, you know, I mean, I feel very privileged that was the case. And actually, our Young Democrats were more socialist than anything. And, you know, we were outspoken, you know, and we had book clubs, you know, that read Henry Miller and things like that. And we were sponsored by these teachers, and nothing had ever happened. And so I guess I'm just, you know, to see this happen in New Mexico is just, you know, horrific. And I'm scared. I'm really scared to see what's happening to this country, you know, just listening to the radio, listening to, you know, these things that are going on. I don't know. I mean, are we headed to a fascist state? Who knows?
Yeah, let's hope and pray that we're not. Justin, thanks very much for calling. I appreciate your call and your comments. To John in North Carolina who had called earlier, you were on track. The poem really, I don't know what the content of the poem was, but I think that we can safely assume that the poem had to do with the war, and in all probability it was in opposition to it. And so this is a question that I think is legitimate for discussion. Should our children in our schools be censored? Is democracy served by censorship? Are the future citizens of America well trained if we teach them that censorship is an appropriate thing? Or should we be teaching them the values of Thomas Jefferson and John Adams Alexander Hamilton and George Washington, I mean, which we're going, you know, across the spectrum of what today would be called from left to right, all of them absolutely were of the opinion that freedom of speech shall not be abridged, that the right to speak one's mind, particularly on the issues of the day, is sacred. That it is as sacred as the right to worship, the right to participate in a religion, to worship the God of your choice. It is absolutely sacred. In fact, it was enshrined in the same First Amendment to the Constitution that guaranteed freedom of religion. Freedom of speech and freedom of religion were considered so sacred and so powerful that they were written together in the First Amendment. Or should we say, nah, don't think so. Our job in a school is to teach kids to sit down and shut up. To just believe what they're told, not have opinions of their own, not share those opinions, and then we're going to expect them to grow up to be what? I lived in Germany for a year, 1986, and I knew and know, I have friends who are people in their 70s, 80s, and 80s now, who lived during Hitler's time. And his control of the schools was absolute. I wrote a book, Tom Hartman's Complete Guide to ADHD. It's a book about learning disabilities, but there's a chapter in there about, called When Good German Schools Came to America. The idea of American compulsory public education found its roots in Germany in 1819 when Fichte, the German philosopher, came up with his idea of how to create an army that could defeat Napoleon. This was after the defeat in 1809 at the Battle of Jena. And Fichte's idea was that the purpose of a school is not to educate, but rather to create a compliant citizen who could become an efficient part of a war machine. And there are some who continue to argue, well, that should be the case. Should be the case. Doug in New Mexico, you've got a comment about this. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, I'm actually calling to say that there was actually three teachers at the Albuquerque School District that were suspended because of material that was controversial in their classrooms.
This happened in your state, Doug. And thank you, by the way, for calling into the program. I appreciate it for calling 1-800-TALK-YES here on the Tom Hartman program. Doug, tell us what you know about this.
Well, it is anti-war material. Most of it was put up by students. One of the teachers actually had a poster in her classroom that was hung by a student that gave an opposing view of the whole war situation. The thing about New Mexico is it's predominantly Democratic, or the Democratic Party, but the majority of the people that are in the Democratic Party are highly conservative. So it's an odd state to be in.
Sure. Well, you know, I think that there are a lot of Democrats who hold what you might call conservative values, particularly fiscal conservatism, the idea that government should balance its books. And,
these are more like the right-wing, just set-in-the-way kind of conservatives. They're not necessarily. Most of the people in New Mexico, this is one of the poorest states in the union. You know, we have an extreme high poverty rate here, but yet they hang on to these very rigid, non-bending ways that are very geared towards conformity.
Doug, do you think that democracy is served by this? Do you think that democracy is helped by our children being censored about politics, or do you think that...
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think it is hindering our growth as a nation towards a better way of life for everybody, and I mean everybody, including the people that are rich.
But Doug, isn't the purpose of a school to teach kids how to read and write? I mean, you know, what business is a school doing having a dialogue about whether or not a nation should engage in a particular type of foreign policy?
That is a new way of thinking about schools. Schools way back when, 12th and 13th century, even up to the early 1700s, were very geared towards expressing the students' opinions. There were some authoritarians, but the majority of people that went to school went because they had a differing point of view and they wanted to learn more about the people and the circumstances that might have led them in that direction.
Doug, I'm right there with you, and I agree totally. And my read of American history, and I've been doing a lot of it lately, I'm working on a book right now that'll be out next year called The Athens Experiment about the history of American democracy. And I've been reading all these letters of Jefferson and Madison, primarily their letters between the two of them. And the founders just were absolutely unyielding about this and absolutely agreed. I mean, Jefferson started the University of Virginia because he felt that everybody should have access to an education regardless of their income level. Doug, I really appreciate your calling. Thanks so much for participating in the program today. We have Jeff in Dallas on the show, and Jeff wants to answer a rhetorical question about whether we're supposed to tell our kids to sit down and shut up. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
How are you?
I'm well.
It's not about, the answer is, it's not what we tell the kids, it's the reason we do it.
Yes.
And the reason we do it is because schools are becoming training academies for corporate drones, and what we're doing is we're teaching kids how to sit in a cubicle for 40 years and not think and just push paper or push buttons on a computer keyboard.
Yeah, I got to tell you a funny story, Jeff. And you know me, and you know my writings. Jeff's an old friend of mine, and I've got a book coming out this fall, and I'm really not saying this to plug this book. I've got a book coming out called The Edison Gene, and it's about how what we call our ADHD kids are actually a gift to society, but our schools are trashing them and harming them and wounding them. And in that book, I was going on and on about how destructive our schools are to these children. And the editor that I have with the publisher is a teacher. And she really got offended by this and came back with all this, oh, no, teachers are just, you know, wonderful people there to help. And I know a lot of teachers, and most of them are wonderful people who are really there to help. But the problem is that they're stuck in this institution that is really, as you say, and as Doug pointed out in the last call, you know, goes back to the 19th century and was really a product of the Industrial Revolution, the purpose of which was they started with the Spinnenschulen in Austria. Queen Teresa started these where the children would work for 6 hours and go to school for 2 hours and to teach them how to work in a factory. And now we've just simply replaced factory with cubicle. What do you think about that, Jeff?
I think that's exactly correct. And you know, and I'll tell you, one of the things that I've really been harping on lately on my show is
on Radio Left.
RadioLeft.com. And is this. What happened? This is a question for you. It's actually two questions. First question is, what is it that the right wingers do when they get angry about what's going on?
Right.
They get organized to vote.
I'm reluctant to say that there is even one category that you can call right-wingers. I know people who identify themselves as conservatives who are not the reactionaries that
I think. But see, I don't think conservative, that's not what I'm talking about. Conservative, the people who are these ultra-right-wing people have destroyed the reputation of conservatives by claiming the name conservative.
I agree. Dwight Eisenhower's rolling over in his grave.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeff, we've got two more callers on the line. Can we summarize this?
Yes. So the other side of it, though, is what do people on the left do when they get angry about what's going on? They stay at home or they vote for third-party candidates instead of getting out and working for people and expecting them to be held accountable.
So you're suggesting people on the left should take a lesson from people on the right?
Vote. Get organized and vote.
Well, I think people on both sides should be voting. I'm absolutely in favor of democracy. I really appreciate your call, Jeff. Thank you very much for calling in. And we've got Mike in Washington, D.C. Mike, welcome to the Tom Hartman radio program here on the IE America Radio Network. Thanks for calling.
How you doing?
I'm great. How are you today?
Alive and semi-kicking.
Oh, good.
Quick question.
So your question. Yeah.
Have you had a chance to see the thing on PBS, Manor House?
I have not. I haven't had a TV for years and years. So
I have, but I try and stick to PBS Discovery or something of that sort, so I can actually feed my brain occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a kind of an interesting project that they're running, where they've got a completely refurbished Edwardian mansion, and they're getting a family to live there, and all the attendant servants that run the mansion. And they're all living according to 1906 rules of etiquette and so forth and so on.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see this modern day family, you know, the head of the family go, oh gee, I could live like this, and then you get to see the absolute drudgery that was going on to support this one family. Well, of course, if you're at the top of the pyramid, it's wonderful to live this way,
right?
And that's the problem. It seems like the Bushites are trying to get us back to that era where you have essentially landless peons which have to labor for you or starve. And
this is certainly, Mike, the core of the proposal that has been put forth in two pieces of legislation now, and now even going around the legislative process, the Bush administration has suggested an administrative rule change that anybody who earns over $21,200 a year will no longer be eligible for time and a half pay and will no longer have a 40-hour constraint. In other words, the employer can demand that they work any number of hours without any additional pay, because if they earn over this $21,000 and some odd dollars summary, then they're cut off. Mike, thanks very much. I really appreciate your call into the show today. We still have Kevin on the line in Montpelier. We'll come back to you, Kevin, after this break. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Coast.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You're kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Whether it's fair or not, people judge you by the words you use. In business and socially, your vocabulary and language skills tell everyone about your background, education, even your intelligence. That's why you need Verbal Advantage. While you listen, Verbal Advantage will give you the confidence that comes with a strong command of the English language. No more fumbling for the right word. No more embarrassment at how to express yourself. No more fear of using the wrong word. And it's so easy. To learn, you simply listen. When you want. Where you want. See why over 100,000 people have already gotten the Verbal Advantage they need for success.
To learn more about Verbal Advantage, call now. 1-800-444-1984. That's 444-1984. 1-800-444-1984.
Quit smoking in 7 days? Now you can with Release HD, the all-natural homeopathic medicine now available without a prescription, designed to break your addiction to nicotine in just 7 days, guaranteed. Listen to what internationally recognized Dr. Richard Cohen has to say about Release HD.
The beauty of the homeopathic medicine in the Release HD system is that it deals with the suffering, eases the withdrawal symptoms, and can take away the jitters. I strongly recommend Release HD to anyone who wants to quit smoking.
It's never too late to stop. The Release HD system goes to work immediately, stopping nicotine cravings, irritability, and withdrawals. Release HD is different from gums and patches because it works from the inside out, giving your body the nutrients it needs to break free. You can quit. Do it the easy way with Release HD.
Call Release HD now for your free trial offer. 1-800-519-5717 and quit smoking for good in 7 days guaranteed. Do it today with Release HD. 1-800-519-5717. That's 1-800-519-5717. Call now.
They're back. The Taliban. Remember them? The repressive and murderous regime of religious fanatics that ruled Afghanistan and shielded Osama bin Laden? You might remember, too, that George W. promised only a couple of years ago that he was going to bomb the Taliban to smithereens, smoke out old Osama, and liberate the people of Afghanistan, using U.S. military might to usher in a bright new day of democracy for this forlorn land. But only 18 months after being ousted by Bush's bombs and our troops, here comes the Taliban right back in, having revived its command structure and begun to reassert its brutish power over the people. Prior to going to war with the Taliban, the Bushites had loudly proclaimed that they were not just going in with bombs, but afterwards would deliver on a plan for reconstruction of the nation's infrastructure. Notice that this is the same thing the Bushites have now promised to the Iraqi people. One of the top leaders of the new government that the Bushites set up after the Afghan war now says what was promised to the Afghans with the collapse of the Taliban was a new life of hope and change. But what was delivered? Nothing. Indeed, Bush bolted for Baghdad. Meanwhile, instead of a flowering democracy in Afghanistan, thieving warlords and a rise of Taliban vigilantism is the rule of the day. The Bushites had promised millions of dollars to create a local police authority that could stabilize the country. But these police went unpaid for months and have drifted away. Interestingly, the Taliban launched its comeback from safe havens in neighboring Pakistan. You might recall that Pakistan, itself ruled by a brutal military dictator, is warmly welcomed by the Bushites as an ally in their perpetual global crusade against evildoers. What a sticky web they weave. This is Jim Hightower saying, bombs alone can't bring democracy, whether in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, or whatever other country is next on Bush's list.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The final 3 minutes here of the Tom Hartman radio program for today. Kevin's on the line from Montpelier. Kevin, we're talking about is democracy served by censorship, either corporate or government censorship. What are your thoughts on this?
Tom, I just have a really quick thought on it. Primarily how privatization of the commons is eroding the effectiveness of the First Amendment and our right to speak is more and more areas from the places we shop, like become shopping malls where you can't go in because it's private property, to the advent of gated communities, there are fewer and fewer places where people can actually go to voice their opinions. And I don't know if that's more than a comment, but it's just something I've been noticing has been getting progressively worse, and I'm wondering where people think it's heading in the future.
Yeah, it's a good one. And in fact, we're going to be tomorrow, I believe, we're doing a show called Talking Back to Talk Radio, and we're going to be talking also about the whole program that the Bush administration, largely Michael Powell, the son of Colin Powell, who was formerly a director of AOL, the giant media combine, that Michael Powell is promoting his agenda of consolidation of the media so that more very large corporations can control more and more of what we see on television, what we hear on the radio, what we read in the newspapers. And Kevin, I think you make a good point. You're here in my hometown in Montpelier, Vermont. What are the symptoms? What are the signs that you're seeing around this?
It's just more. I don't see it as much here, but I just noticed. It kind of struck home to me that during some of the Gulf War protests, I was up in the Church Street Marketplace, which is unusual because it's an outdoor public marketplace, and mm-hmm. people were able to protest there, but they're protesting directly in front of the mall, where as soon as you walked in there, like, legally you can't go in there and protest. They'll ask you to leave.
Right.
And I think that's just getting to be more of a problem.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Kevin, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call and your participation here on the Tom Hartman radio program. We're on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be back tomorrow. And thank you very much for joining us today. Do good. Have a great afternoon.
Through a hole in the air, from those nets in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.